I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know. I'm not sure what's happened to this frequently lighthearted segment, but this week all of our stories are about villains. Blame our guests, I guess. We're joined this time around by Will Leach from Sports on Earth via Skype and Claire McNear from The Ringer. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you, as always.
Will, I'm going to give you the opportunity to introduce villain number one.
I was a little worried when you played the music. I was like, wait, is the State of the Union early this year? What was... But no, apparently it's...
And we're off and running.
This week's villain is Tom Brady. I know everybody hates Tom Brady, which to me... I have to say, seems strange. I was thinking about the idea that, like, in 20 years, my children are going to ask me, wow, look at Tom Brady. Look what he did. What was it like to watch him? And I'm going to have to say, oh, well, we all responded by drawing genitalia on his face on Twitter. That's exactly what we did to respond to the greatest athlete of our time. Remember, Ted Williams was once a great villain. These great villains of their time are already now A-Rod gets his own TV show, and everybody loves Reggie Jackson now. Like, this is Tom Brady going to do something that no quarterback has ever done, win his fifth Super Bowl, playing at the age of 39, which no one has ever played at this level before. And we are all responding by extending our middle fingers when he comes on the television. This seems ultimately short-sighted.
I say this as a dedicated Barry Bonds apologist, but Brady doesn't even make a very good villain, you know? He's like Harry Potter. He doesn't really have a discernible personality apart from good at what he does.
Yeah, I feel bad about saying this, but it really does feel like mostly envy. It does feel like, oh, Mr. Perfect Guy with his perfect life and perfect everything. I hate you for all of those things.
Well, Will, there is much that is silly here, and there are a lot of people who've hated or resented Tom Brady for lots of reasons, his success, whatever, for as long as the Pats have been winning Super Bowls. Much more recently, something we should consider, when a candidate, in this case Donald Trump, before he was elected, reads a letter of support from a successful NFL coach, Bill Belichick, and refers to a successful quarterback, Tom Brady, as his pal, the coach and the athlete, whether they like it or not, whether or not the quarterback's wife likes it, which apparently she doesn't, those guys are being used. And they're going to get hated by some people, and they're going to get loved by other people who think they're doing just exactly the right thing.
To me, the most amazing thing about Belichick's letter to Trump was that, wow, Bill Belichick writes the way that Donald Trump talks. That's terrifying in like so many different sort of ways. Brady, I think, has hedged a little bit on that. And I've always felt like Belichick is the guy. Hate that guy. Like, if you want to be angry about Spygate, Deflategate has always seemed a very silly story to me, but Spygate was like, that was actually I'm trying to get the opposing team's plans and use them against them. That is empire type of stuff. Tom Brady does things on the field that we've never seen before. Bill Belichick, he does things that we unfortunately are familiar with in our daily life.
Claire, move us on to villain number two, please.
Well, so the Warriors just broke ground on their new arena in San Francisco, a ceremony that was complete with acrobats dressed as construction workers and a synchronized tractor dance. The Warriors have the best record in the NBA and were deep into the backlash against a team that just a year ago was America's sweethearts. They've tied themselves to Silicon Valley, and they've made a point of saying they're not just better than you, they're richer too, and they're glitzier and bigger and fancier. So I say welcome to the Warriors, the NBA's newest supervillains.
It's difficult to separate the players and that spectacle. The cranes were amazing, but really the dancing construction workers, like, this is actually, I think, how people in Silicon Valley think construction workers do their job, perhaps. Like, I'm not exactly sure. But for me, I try to still find joy in that team itself, to watch them. I try to hold on to that. If I start blaming the ownership of a team against the team itself, I'm not going to be able to watch sports at all.
Good point. Claire, I need a little help with this. Apart from the fact that I think dancing cranes is a really good idea, anything that diverts us from the day-to-day business of being here in the United States these days is good. But don't fans always behave this way? I mean, when they've been fans of a team that loses and loses and loses and suddenly starts winning, don't they overnight become obnoxious no matter what sport or what city we're talking about?
Absolutely. I mean, I think any superstar team, any superstar player is going to inevitably have a sort of backlash as the fans get more confident and more visible. But I think the critique with the Warriors is that there is a sense that a lot of those really loud fans are relatively new fans. And the fact that they're moving to San Francisco, I think, is particularly painful. This is a rough time to be an Oakland sports fan. The Raiders are great, but they're about to leave, possibly. The A's are perpetually terrible. And now the Warriors are moving back to San Francisco. And it's been a real bummer of a few years.
All right. I want to bring up a college basketball team. On Monday, the Duke men's basketball team lost a game at home. That brought the team's record to 15-5. Coach Mike Krzyzewski, who has been away from the bench due to back surgery, told the players they were banned from the locker room and forbidden from wearing team gear because they weren't, quote, living up to the standards of the Duke program. Coach K has a player on the squad, Grayson Allen, who intentionally tripped opponents three times. He still got to use the locker room. But losing is different. Anyway, forbidding the players from going into their locker room, I mean, why not make them sit in a chair facing the corner? It just feels to me like Coach K has made a figure of fun out of himself, and I don't think that's at all what he intended to do. What do you think, Claire?
I think that right now with Coach K out, it shows how dependent they are on him, even with a stacked roster. And he's almost 70 now. He's not going to be coaching for all that much longer, even, you know, he's coming back next month. And I wonder if some of this is his kind of frustration at that sort of dawning reality that Duke is a powerhouse with Coach K, but maybe not without him.
I would love to see Coach K try this with his Olympic team. Like, just go ahead and tell LeBron. Don't tell LeBron. Until you play better, you can't come in the locker room, and see what LeBron's reaction to that is. To me, this feels like a Bob Knight, old school college basketball, Hickory High move. And frankly, I feel like athletes deserve more respect than that. It's quite the thing for Coach K to say, hey, you don't deserve to wear this gear that I personally make millions and millions and millions of dollars from Nike when you wear that onto the court every day and you don't get anything for it, but you don't deserve it to wear it. It starts to feel like a little bit more than just a college basketball coach move and more worrisome type of power.
Yeah, man, beyond all that, what happens if Duke loses another game? That they make the players turn in their free Nike sneakers and walk around the campus barefoot, I guess. My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been Will Leach of Sports on Earth and Claire McNear of The Ringer. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks so much for having me.
A pleasure as always.